I mean, for me, the beautiful thing about carrying on this tradition is that it's like an open house. You're welcoming everyone to your home. And that's what it was. They would leave the door open and everyone was welcome. And so I thought, you know, I really wanted to carry this tradition. It's a beautiful one. It's a happy one.
Welcome to 18 Jewish Foods, Culture and History, in kosher bite-sized portions. This podcast tells the stories of iconic Jewish dishes, shedding light on the people who eat them. Here's your host, Joel Haber.
This episode is being released in the middle of Passover, and often I ask people, what is the next Jewish holiday that follows Passover? Many people jump to Shavuot. Some people think of Lag BaOmer or even Yom HaAtzmaut. But in fact, the next Jewish holiday will begin immediately after the end of Passover, that evening. And it is known as Mimuna. It is a Moroccan Jewish holiday. And the story of Mimuna and the food most associated with it is what this episode is all about. In Morocco, the Jews would go to their Muslim Arab neighbors who would give them gifts of flour and yeast so that they could once again have chametz after Passover. And they would make a lightly risen dough and crepes that were known as moufleta. And then they would have a big party, open their house, and everybody would come and share food and sweets, both Jews and their non-Jewish neighbors. The moufleta is actually a very interesting pastry in the way it's made. So it is, as I said, a lightly risen dough spread in a pan. After one side fries, it is flipped, and then the second crepe is placed on top of the first one. Then the two are flipped together, another one put on top of that. And continually you do this until you have a stack of moufleta crepes, all fried on one side, and the other side just basically cooks from the heat of the one beneath it. When they're served, typically they are served with butter and honey drizzled on, which is delicious. And some say that this is to represent the biblical phrase, a land of milk and honey. Now, it is important to note that moufleta is not the same food as moufaletta, the famous sandwich of New Orleans. There are those who have speculated that there may be some connection between these two foods. It seems a bit far-fetched to me. It's not very convincing, but perhaps there is some distant connection. What I think moufleta and Mimuna both show the most is how well the Jews got along with their Arab neighbors in Morocco. And frankly, this was the case around the Muslim world. I don't want to overstate things and say that things were perfect. Certainly, throughout the Muslim world, Jews always were treated historically as second-class citizens. There was the official dhimmi status that said that they were of a lower status, and they had to, there were all sorts of laws that discriminated, what clothes they could wear, they would have to pay a special tax, things of this nature. But there's also no doubt that through most of history, you would have been much better off living as a Jew in the Muslim world than in the Christian world. And in Morocco in particular, the Jews did get along fairly well with their Muslim Arab neighbors. So the question, especially in the context of this podcast, is whether or not moufleta actually is a Jewish food. And so the first thing I did was I spoke with a colleague who runs food tours in Morocco, and I asked her, and she told me that no, this is not something that Muslims in Morocco make or eat. But at the same time, I have come across, there's a gentleman here in Jerusalem in Machane Yehuda market, in the main market here, who has a stand that makes moufleta all year round. And in addition to this traditional way of making it, he also will use it as a wrap for savory fillings and then make it into like a crispy toasted sandwich. And he told me that he encountered this, I believe it was in Belgium, it was certainly in Europe, from Moroccan Arabs who were living there as well, and that they used to do it this way. And so that suggests that perhaps Moroccans, Muslim Moroccans, do eat this food. But to me, what really indicates its Jewish origins, in addition to the fact that in Morocco it does not appear to be eaten by non-Jews, is that it is such a lightly risen dough. The dough is mixed, and very quickly it's turned into this baked good. And it kind of indicates to me that it's the outgrowth of the reason. Jews wanted as quickly as possible to get back to making their chametz, their leavened dough. And so they didn't let it rise for a very long time. They obviously let it rise for longer than what it would take for it to remain technically matzah, but it didn't turn into a bread per se. Also suggesting its Jewish roots is the fact that Jews in Morocco would also use muffuletta at other celebratory events, such as a henna ceremony, which takes place before bride and groom get married. All of this suggests to me that yes, it is in fact a Jewish food. While mimuna does indicate the good relations between Jews and Muslims in Morocco, it is not unique in the Jewish world. There were many other similar traditions that took place in other parts of the Jewish world, both between Jews and Muslims, and even between Jews and Christians in many places. For example, in Jerusalem, it was common for Arabs to give their Jewish neighbors at the end of Passover a gift of bread, goat's butter, and honey. Interesting, by the way, to note the combo of those three things is the same as the muffuletta in Morocco. And in turn, the Jews would give the Arabs their leftover matzah and jam, and this was something that the local Arabs really appreciated. They liked the matzah. We have records from 15th century Spain where various different foods were gifted to Jews at the end of Passover by Christians. Also in Petigliano of Italy, the Jews on Passover would give matzot and unleavened sweets to the Christians, and at the end, the Christians would regift some of their Easter-related sweets. And so all of these are ways of returning to eating chametz after this holiday of Passover. To speak a little bit more about muffuletta and its connections to the Moroccan Jewish world, as well as generally some of the food connections between Jews and Muslims in the Muslim world, my guests will be Rachel Scheff and Sharon Gompertz. Rachel Scheff was born in Casablanca and moved to LA at a young age. Sharon is of Iraqi descent and was born in Tel Aviv, and then via Australia eventually moved to Los Angeles as well. The two have been friends since high school. Collectively, they are known as the Sephardic Spice Girls. They write a weekly column in the Jewish Journal in Los Angeles. They give classes and all sorts of other things. Rachel, you were born in Morocco and left at a young age. I'm wondering if you have memories of mimuna in Morocco.
I left at the age of 7, almost 8 years old, and I have little glimpses. I remember my mom, having a big table and her red kaftan. I remember things like that. I remember everybody coming over. She did it every year. And then I've seen photos, so I'm not sure if the photos are my memories or,
And in the photos or in your memories, were there Muslims there as well, or was it primarily Jews that were there?
No, it was primarily Jews. But I do know my mother and my father have told me stories. At the end of Pesach, the Arab neighbors or my grandfather's employees would bring sacks of flour and breads from the community oven. They would bring them all kinds of things so that they could have mimuna. And my grandparents would invite the Arabs and the Muslims to join them.
Speaking specifically about muffuletta, is this something that your mother would make or your grandmother?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like the number one thing you eat on mimuna. Then recently I started doing it.
So now you host a mimuna every year?
It's been 2 years. I've done it twice. And I really, I love it. I just really love how I feel like I'm carrying on a tradition. And Sharon and I made muffuletta last year.
But I think you started celebrating mimuna once your mother had passed away.
Right.
Her mother passed away 2 years ago. So then it became really important to keep the tradition going.
So what's interesting to me about Mufleta and about Mimuna is the connection between Jews and non-Jews. And what's interesting is that this actually isn't unique to Morocco, that there are similar customs in many Jewish communities. And so I'm wondering, Sharon, if you know of anything, I know that you were not born in Iraq, you're just of Iraqi descent, but if you know of any similar things that took place in Iraq.
You know, my grandmother's family is from the south of Iraq, where the tomb of Ezra Sofer is. And the tomb where he was buried is a holy place. One side of it is for the Jews, and the other side is for the Shiite Muslims who live there. I don't know. I know that they had people working for them, Arabs working for them, that they loved and they trusted. I don't know necessarily that they sat, you know, specifically after Pesach. I never heard anything like that.
I've read about in Jerusalem in the late 1800s or early 1800s, perhaps, when Jews and Arabs here got along much better, that in fact there was a similar gift exchange of food at the end of Passover.
That's really beautiful. Yeah, but definitely my family, my parents always talk about how wonderful their Arab neighbors were and how much they got along. And, you know, for Purim, my grandmother would give them all plates of sweets. You know, it was very inclusive.
There are certainly other foods, maybe that don't actively have the gift giving, but there are certainly many foods that Jews and non-Jews throughout the Muslim world eat in common. Sharon,
right.
Did you have experience from hearing, I guess, since you didn't live in Iraq, but hearing from your parents or grandparents about any of that type of crossover?
Yeah, look, the people, they always had, you know, Arabs working in their homes, I'm sure in the kitchens, helping them. Like there would be somebody who would come and bake breads in the house that would be Arab. So I'm sure the recipes crossed over. There were friends, you know, that were, you know, Arab and Jews together.
So I guess to sort of go back to the mufleta and maybe wrap up with that, or maybe pun intended, wrap up. As we discussed it in Morocco with Mimuna, it was often a tool for bridging a cultural gap. Here in Israel, where unfortunately Jews and Muslims do not get along quite as well as they perhaps did in Morocco, Mimuna still bridges a cultural gap between Moroccans and Ashkenazim.
Definitely.
And I'm wondering in Los Angeles, with Mimuna or with Mufleta, if you are seeing it as a way of bridging any cultural gaps.
I think so. Definitely. Everybody's excited. It's a party. Who doesn't want a party after 7 days of no bread and cookies? So everybody's pretty excited to show up.
So are most of your guests Moroccans, or are they Ashkenazim? Are the others Sephardim? What are they?
It's very mixed, mostly Sephardim, not necessarily Moroccan, but we do have some Ashkenazi friends that show up and love it, you know, and enjoy the food. I mean, for me, the beautiful thing about carrying on this tradition is that it's like an open house. You're welcoming everyone to your home. And that's what it was. They would leave the door open and everyone was welcome. And so I thought, you know, I really wanted to carry this tradition. It's a beautiful one. It's a happy one.
All right. Well, I hope to make it to one of your Mimunas sometime in the future.
That would be wonderful. We'd love that.
Just to expand a drop on that comment I made about Israel, for much of Israel's history, despite the fact that Ashkenazim were in the minority, they still held much of the power, certainly in the early years of the state. Moroccan Jews, meanwhile, were the largest non-Ashkenazi nationality in the country. And they were in the forefront of trying to push back and gain some recognition for Moroccan Jewry, as well as other Sephardic and Mizrahi communities. The shift began in the 1960s and into the 1970s through various means. And eventually there was a real shift that took place. More non-Ashkenazic food was available, certainly in the army that started to be served, rather than just giving everybody things like gefilte fish. Of course, losing some of the power that they once had, there was animosity between Ashkenazi Jews and, let's say, Moroccan. And Mimuna became a time of healing. As I said, in Morocco, Mimouna was used, and Moufleta specifically was used, as a way of bridging the gap between Jews and Muslims, that these were different groups, and yet they were showing a friendship bond between them. In Israel, the Jews and the Arabs here were not getting along very well, but they did use Mimouna. The Moroccans did use Mimouna as a way of bridging a local cultural gap by reaching out to Ashkenazi Jews and having them as their guests at Mimouna. And so there's definitely something very interesting in the way that this food and this tradition has come to be a tool for bringing different groups together. Hopefully, we'll be able to do it with Muslims again sometime in the future here in Israel. So this is the end of my fifth episode, which means that this series is now one quarter done, and I believe that's a good time to do a little bit of house cleaning. So I would say that, first of all, I really would love your feedback, positive or negative. So if you have any thoughts about the podcast so far, please email me. My email is jewishfoodbook@gmail.com. And of all the things that you can do to help spread the word, really sharing this podcast with anybody else who might be interested goes a really long way, and I'd really appreciate it. The next episode will be focusing on burekas, and my guest will be Chani Apfelbaum. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed. Got any questions or comments? Please feel free to email me at jewishfoodbook@gmail.com. Please listen, like, and follow wherever you get your podcasts, and I would truly appreciate it if you'd share this with other Jewish food lovers. The theme music you hear is Adir Hu Revisited by Rebbe Sol. Check him out wherever you stream music. And as always, until next time, I wish you B'Tei Avon.